Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. Once again, I'm coming to you from an undisclosed hotel in the greater D.C. area. Steve's back home in Cleveland. How you doing, man?
Doing good. What sketchy hotel are you in again?
I'm not a sketchy one this time. This time I'm actually at a reasonably nice one, but I told you we had a bizarre incident here last time, so I'm keeping it undisclosed.
Oh, right.
Anyway, so Steve, we talked just a couple days ago, and the Deadpool got reset with the dismissal of Reince Priebus. Notice I started stumbling over the word because saying Reince is so hard for me. But before we could even think about talking again, the Deadpool is reset again because Mooch is toast.
Yeah, I mean, it happened pretty quickly. The funny thing is, you know, on our website, I wrote about is Scaramucci, and was Scaramucci and his mouth going to get himself in trouble? You know, was he going to make it a full 30 days? Well, it turns out that he was barely able to make it 10 days and got bounced out. Now, the specifics on how he ended up ousted out of the White House is still a little hazy, as it is for everybody. You know, I call it a fire resignation or a fire...
Right.
A fire resignation. Where he was
that rolls off the tongue.
Right, he was fired, he resigned, he was asked for his resignation, all of it. So, a couple different things here. I think there's probably some truth to the fact that General John Kelly wanted his own people in there, people that he thought would serve the president to this point. I think that the president wasn't happy with the criticism of Bannon. Obviously, Bannon, I'm sure, was not happy about it.
Okay, who hasn't said that a coworker was busy trying to suck his own cock? I mean, come on. I said that to my boss all the time.
That's a great point. I also think that there was... I think that kind of brash, open, Italian stallion bravado that Scaramucci brought... definitely clashed with General Kelly and his thought process and his mentality and his way of doing things. You don't need to be I don't know what you would be, but you don't need to be a professional to be able to figure out that those two guys probably wouldn't work well together. So I think that General Kelly went to Trump and said he needs to go. Trump said, yeah, I agree. And Bannon chimed in, like, yep, me too. And they both told him to shut up and zip his pants up. Shut up and zip up. And then they went in.
Shut
and
up,
said,
Steve. Right. Not you, but Steve Bannon.
You're right. And it was the move to make. Now, the question is, bringing in a guy like Kelly, does that stabilize the White House? Does it stabilize the administration? He's a military guy. His agenda is going to be a little bit different than a Reince Priebus, who was, I think, in a way, just bullied by Trump, and so he quickly kind of got out over his skis with trying to talk back some of the things that Trump was saying, being caught in positions where, what was coming out of the administration wasn't true or didn't make sense, or maybe felt like a bad deal for the people, and he's trying to support it, but he just wasn't quick enough on his feet. And after a while, he eventually got neutered. And so now the question is, a guy like John Kelly, that's not going to happen to him. But, a little side story about John Kelly, the rumor out of D.C. was, he was pretty upset when Comey was fired, right? When Donald Trump fired James Comey, the FBI director, and Kelly was the head of the Department of Homeland Security, to show a sign of solidarity, Kelly was making suggestions like he was going to resign and show support for James Comey. And now he goes from being just so upset that James was fired to now, running basically, the White House staff for the president. So... it'll be a very interesting dynamic to see kind of how this goes. how Kelly interacts with a guy like Trump, who is the complete opposite of a military man, no matter what he says about the time he spent in military school.
You know, what you're saying is obviously true, but do you think Trump is just plain enamored with generals and anyone? I mean, so a lot of the media, particularly the, you know, CNN, MSNBC type, says that, you know, Trump is just very easily influenced, very easily led. He's enamored with these guys from the military because they, you know, give off an air of toughness and confidence and whatever. And part of me thinks that's true, but I don't want to get sucked into the trap of saying, you know, he sees something shiny and can't help but play with it. As much as I don't respect the man, I don't want to minimalize his abilities unfairly, and I don't know if I am when I think that.
Well, I think he definitely thinks that, but I think a lot of people do that, right? Like, that's especially if you're a conservative, especially, or, you know, not even necessarily, you don't necessarily have to be a conservative, but it's very trendy now to be, like, over-the-top supportive of the military blindly, no matter what, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it affects me, too. I think when I meet people in decorated, you know, uniform.
Right. Hold on. And I think that there's a balance between having respect for our military. When I see someone, especially when I travel, you know, I always, you know, tip the cap. You know, if I'm close enough and it's not too awkward, we'll say thank you. Or, you know, let them, you know, hold the door open for them or give them my seat better or whatever.
Sure.
I think, you know, obviously because I do it, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that there is a certain, and it's more, you know, you see it on social media, you see it on your people with a microphone, whether it's entertainers or what have you, or politicians, where, you know, it's just they go through they want you to, they go out of their way to tell you how much they appreciate the military, which, again, it's a fine line because it almost sounds like it's like I'm anti-patriotic, but I think, you know, when it's phony and it's forced and it's pandering to a certain base, and that's what a lot of, especially on the right, you see that a lot, and especially with Trump and, you know, coming directly out of his mouth and his crew, like, you know, I mean, Donald Trump Jr., you know, during the campaign was saying all this stuff about the military. And it's like, you know, if your father wasn't running for president, I'm pretty sure you could give two shits about the military.
Or certainly not the people in it, because they view the people in it as being beneath them. I mean, I always think back to the Dick Cheney, George Bush presidency, vice presidency, is like, you know, Dick Cheney did everything he could to avoid military service and then ultimately becomes the, you know, Secretary of Defense at one point, I think. But anyway, I'm trying to not buy, blindly buy into the narrative that, you know,
I don't think that this is about, you know, and what I mean by this is bringing in John Kelly as the new White House chief of staff. I don't think this is about Trump being enamored with a politician. I think this is Trump where we forget, like, even though he hasn't shown us his best side over the last year, the guy is a pretty savvy businessman, right? He may not be worth $20 billion, but he's made a whole hell of a lot of money for him and his family and his kids. And so he's got plenty of skill in terms of, you know, navigating certain landscapes. And I think that he is smart enough to realize that no matter what he portrays or what he says in the media, on Twitter, his administration was spiraling out of control. He needed a change. He knew it. And I think that part of it was, okay, I need somebody in here who's not an idiot. I need someone in here who I need a general, right? Like, who's gonna lead my staff? I need a leader. There's no better leader than a general. And this guy, John Kelly, and I don't know where that name came from, how he ended up with it. That would be something I would like to know. But I think that's where this is coming from.
Well, interestingly, he puts a general as his chief of staff. He also, and we kind of skipped over this in our last conversation, he tweeted that he was banning transgenders from the military and mentioned that, you know, he had spoken to his advisors and they were on board. And there's been nothing but backlash from military brass that I've seen since he said that. And again, he handled it with a tweet. I don't even... This is... We've been in surreal land for a while now. But the idea that the President of the United States would tweet something so inflammatory with, apparently without the support of much of the military, and would then not have, you know, not have their support. And the fact that that whole story has pretty much blown over in 3 days just shows what wild times we're in.
But Jim, doesn't that go exactly back to what we were talking about in our last episode, where they, you know, they take the shiny frisbee, they throw it out there, the media loses its mind, the people who oppose Trump lose their minds. They completely forget about whatever the other issue is, and the cycle continues over and over and over again. You know, Trump tweets that out there right at a time where his communications director is talking about his chief strategist sucking his own cock. His chief of staff is cowering in a corner and just got called a paranoid schizophrenic by that same communications director. Oh, by the way, that communications director just replaced the other communications director who was replacing the other communications director. Listen, his administration was, it still is, in a tailspin. And so if you don't think that whole transgender tweet was just to throw the frisbee to get everybody off the fact that shit was the ship was burning and on its way down, then, that's why it was a tweet. That's why it caught everybody off guard, including the people who didn't sign off on it.
Here's where I sort of, I won't say I disagree with you, but I see it a bit differently. I don't think it was necessarily to shiny item distract us. I think it was to rally his xenophobic, anti-trans, you know, wave the flag at everything, even if it's a Confederate flag crowd.
Jim, you're actually saying the same thing, right? Get the base focused on.
Okay. I thought you were talking about getting us distracted. You're talking about getting his base distracted and rallying them. Okay.
It's all of the above, right? Get the base distracted. Get the base under, behind something that they can really, support and get nasty about.
If they talk about it at the bar and say, maybe you should have done this different, but.
Well, that's, I think the funny thing is, why do we start this show? Because people don't have this conversation at bars. They actually, a lot of this shit is happening online. That's why he released it on social media and start the social media storm, right? Like, if you look at all, if you look at the coverage, it was, people, it was the news media covering, entertainers' tweets as they lashed out at Donald Trump from their comfy homes on Twitter, or Facebook, or, an Instagram post. It was as much about getting the base to get behind something, firing up all the, following up the opposition and getting them pissed about something so that they could all be focused on the same thing and completely forget about whatever else was going on at that time.
Maybe we are saying the same thing.
I think we are. But I think that what he did, it served a purpose. Is he crazy like a fox, or is he just really stupid and crazy? I don't know.
I don't know either. But when I've listened to a few of his speeches, so I did a lot of driving this last weekend, and I listened to a good chunk of his Boy Scout speech, and I listened to a good chunk of his speech on Long Island in front of the cops, and it is such rambling nonsense. I mean, he'll be talking about Boy Scouts, and then talk about how the Electoral College is so hard for Republicans to win, and then how the Democrats don't want this, they don't want rich people in charge of the Treasury. Well, I think rich people. I mean, I'm listening to this guy going, "Holy fuck!" you and I both, I think, agree that Obama was a phenomenal public speaker. And, you know, the knock on him was, well, he's just reading off a teleprompter. Well, that's, we've also talked about the nuance, or not such subtle nuance, of what you're really saying with that. But even if that was true, can someone get Trump to do what the, if all you got to do to be a great orator is read off a teleprompter, can someone please get him to do that? Because he was over the place.
Well, one, I think Obama had amazing speechwriters. Two, Obama also had a big part in his own speeches, ripping them apart, putting them back together again. And Obama is a great orator. Obama is an attorney. Being an attorney doesn't necessarily make you a great public speaker, but if you take a certain track in, you know, studying law and developing as a lawyer, then a big part of that is going to be speaking in front of crowds, speaking in front of people, in front of juries, in front of large groups, in front of multiple people during a mediation, speaking in front of people during a deposition. So as an attorney, now, Obama spent a lot of his time doing community organizing, but he was also a professor, he was a teacher. He was more groomed for that particular aspect of being president.
Clearly.
And so whoever came in behind Obama had big shoes to fill. And the thing with Donald Trump is, you listen to his campaign speeches, you listen to his speeches now, but you're not blown away, you're not overwhelmed, you're not like, wow, this is an amazing speaker. But the weird thing is that if you listen to him talk from, maybe 25 years ago, right, where he's given public addresses and things like that, he was a better speaker in the, early 90s and the late 80s. And I don't know what to attribute that to. And I don't know
I think I do.
I don't know how to quantify it or explain it.
My guess is in those days there were multiple takes. I don't know how many of those speeches were live.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. And I don't know. And part of me says maybe this is time. Maybe he's just at that age. He's at that I don't give a fuck age. When your parents, I know when my dad is just about at that point where he just doesn't give a fuck, right? If you say, hey, Dad, show up at this time. He shows up an hour late. And you're like, Dad, I told you to be here at a certain time. And he's just like, I've been on this planet for however many years. I get here when I get here. It's just like, all right.
No, I went through that with my dad.
It's just like, it's just that age where, he's starting to say shit in public and it's just like, just painfully embarrassing. And it's not as bad for me as maybe like my sisters or my mom, because I just think it's hilarious, but I'm noticing it's getting a little, it's advancing each year. He gets a little older, and so I don't know, Trump's got my dad by like 15 years, so he may just be at a point where he just doesn't give a fuck, so he's not worried about giving a great speech. He's just saying what's on his mind. He's like, I'm 70 years old, I'm rich as fuck, I am the president of the United States, who am I worried about critiquing me?
Well, and I think one major difference between your dad and Donald Trump, and not that there aren't several, is that...
There's a few.
Yeah, there's a few. Your dad has much better taste in whiskey, among other things. But also, What's that? I know. Or does he? I mean, he says he doesn't, but...
Not right, true.
But I'd respect him more if he did. Those tweets would make a hell of a lot more sense if he was hammered. But we're also talking about a clear narcissistic person in Trump. Whether it's to the point of being a psychosis, neither of us are qualified to say. But to say he's narcissistic is, I don't think, a stretch in any way whatsoever. And that really, all right, but even beyond the narcissism and everything else, the pandering to his base is becoming, it's frightening to me, and I'm a 46-year-old white man. So, the speech he gave in front of the cops on Long Island, which again was meandering and it threw in the election in Chicago and a bunch of other stuff. But he also said essentially, hey, when you're putting someone in the back seat, instead of putting your hand up and getting them in there safely, don't be too gentle. And a lot of law enforcement organizations have come out and said, whoa, we're not endorsing that. But that says to me two things. One, a complete lack of having your ear to the ground on the current tone of things. And two, yet again, let's rile up that Confederate flag flying base. And I know I've come back to that a few times because I've seen a lot of them lately and I'm getting pissed about it.
Well, you know, you're right. It's pandering. And I think now you're starting to see some parts of his base, you know, the kind of outside fringe that were kind of middle of the road. They were longtime Democrats that came over because they weren't thrilled about the Democrats. And maybe, you know, they've always been in the middle, or, you know, just, you had someone who was just kind of, after the last, you know, 15 years, they just kind of been lost. And so they were able to dismiss a lot of what Trump was saying during the campaign, attributing it to saying, all right, it's a campaign. He's saying what he's got to do to get elected. But now they're saying, all right, well, he's sticking to some of this, and he's sticking to a lot of the stuff that I said was part of the campaign, Donald Trump, right? And then all the stuff that I actually wanted him to follow through with, nothing's happening. There's no movement. There's no traction. And it looks like it's dead in the water, a la healthcare. But he's really starting to turn up the kind of stuff, the ugly side of things, you know, and so I think there are people, albeit a small percentage of people, that are starting to break away from his base. Now, let's not get this twisted. I beat up on the Democrats because they take a lot of losses. I mean, they take loss after loss after loss, right? You know, I mean, since for the last...
Well, Steve, you know, they did come within 5 points, and the previous race was between 17.
Right. I mean, I'm just saying, like, I mean, this, for the last 2 years, they've just been getting punched in the face. But, I mean, these losses are by small margins, right? I mean, we're talking small percentage points of people. So even if you start to lose small pieces of Trump's base, then that's a problem for him. That's a problem for the Republicans. That's a problem for the GOP, because it won't take many people to say, you know what, screw this guy. I don't know what he's about. You know, I'm uncomfortable with all, you know, things are getting a little too gross for me. I'm going to go back to the other side. I'm going to hold my nose and go back to the other side because this just isn't working. You know, I mean, and that's not to say that the Democrats have done anything right. Better ingredients, better pizza, Papa John's. You know, I mean, but people will still may say, all right, I'd rather go get a better pizza from the Democrats than, you know, have to deal with this racist bullshit that, you know, the Trump administration is putting out there.
Well, and I think, Steve, that kind of like we saw with Hillary, you don't necessarily need to, if at the next, especially in a midterm election, you don't need the opposing party to do anything other than fail to show up in the proper numbers, right? I think we can agree.
Right. You don't have to do it by landslide. People think that it's got to be by a landslide. But you're right. I think you hit it. It's, listen, at the end of the day, you said it at the end of the day again. I know. See, there needs to be some sort of physical. Like,
well, you told me to throw a bottle cap. You told me to throw a bottle cap at you, but I can't do that from here.
Well, so. Yeah, I mean, long distance, you can't do it. I think, but in person, if and when I say it, there needs to be a physical repercussion. Maybe not the bottle cap, because I just got new glasses.
Okay.
And so I don't want to chip a lens or anything like that. But you know, maybe you can slap me or something. I don't know.
I'm sorry. This is all on video right now. We do not right now, but typically now when we record in studio, it's right on video. We'll figure something out. You know, anyway, I've got it figured out. I've already got it.
Okay.
It's going to be the Zima of punishment or something like that. Like every time you say it, you have to take a swig of something as awful as like a Zima or a Mike's Hard Lemonade or something like that.
Well, hard lemonade with like citron vodka and actual
yes.
lemonade.
Yes.
With a spoonful of sugar.
Yeah, you know, we should have the beverage of punishment for both of us. Like, if you do this, you'd have to take a swig of, oh, we'll buy that fucking horrible, what was that horrible rum I bought that one time?
Oh, God, no.
Yes.
No, can't do that.
Yes.
No, we're not going to have this conversation on the
Show. Well, here, all right.
So
beverage of punishment coming up.
We will decide a beverage of punishment. It's got to be something that I can at least swallow without throwing up through my nostrils. But anyway, we got a little off track.
Yes,
here.
We did. And
but,
all right, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I think that, you know, the whole point is it's not going to take much to shift things to the other side if Trump doesn't get his shit together. Now, they've already lost healthcare, right? I mean, healthcare has been dead multiple times, and now it's really dead. And you've had multiple GOP senators come out and say, listen, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And with that issue, like, as much as people want to say it was about race and all that other stuff, like, that definitely had an impact. But listen, you go to the bars, you listen around the water cooler, what people are worried about is how much are they going to pay out of their check for health insurance. Right? Like, how much is it going to cost them to go to the doctor? How much is it going to cost them, you know, to if they have to go to the emergency room? You know, like, that's what people are worried about. And, you know, if they're healthy, they're just like, I don't want to pay for other people. And if they're not healthy, they say, listen, I don't want to go bankrupt. So that's really the big concern for a lot of people. And watching this fail over and over and over again, and Republicans have control of everything. Right, Republicans have control of everything, and they still can't fucking get. They can't get they can't get the Affordable Care Act repealed. They can't get. They can't get a replacement in place. And everybody's looking at it and saying, "You said that this was going to be done day one."
Yeah.
Right. Well, we're damn near 200 days into this, and you guys still can't figure out what you're even voting on.
It's hysterical to me when I hear Trump say, "Not one Democrat voted this way." Can you believe it? Well, what does that tell you? As if there was peace and harmony prior to his arrival, and suddenly things got drawn on political lines. Now, I'm not saying that makes anything okay. Just the short-term memory is hysterical to me. So another thing, though, back to getting people to come out and getting people to shift things in 2018. Last time I said, you know, why doesn't a Democrat put a healthcare bill out there, even if it's doomed to failure? You know, you and I and many others have criticized the Republicans for saying, you know, Obamacare is a disaster. It needs to be repealed. It needs to be replaced. And then they sat on their thumbs for 7 years and didn't have anything ready. And to me, that's unacceptable as a professional. You know, if you've got a better plan, even if you know you can't pass it, you should be getting it ready so it's ready to drop when you get the chance. The Republicans didn't do it. The Democrats, in my opinion, should. And to go even further, I'm really encouraged because I read today that Cory Booker is proposing a law to make marijuana, you know, drop the federal ban and to basically make a federal legalization of marijuana. Now, we've talked about this issue enough times. I'm not a pot smoker, but I've also said that the fact that it's illegal is silly. And I've talked a number of times about being in, you know, well-to-do white suburbs with friends, all of whom typically vote Republican. None of them will admit to me they voted for Trump. I don't know that I believe all of them. But if all of them tell me they voted, and they tell me they didn't vote for Trump, but I wonder if they're telling me that because they don't want me to unload on them. However, if in 2018 this Cory Booker bill gets introduced, fails, but it's in the back pocket of the Democratic Party, especially in a midterm, will the crowds like that say, you know, I can put a vote behind so-and-so because that'll get pot legalized. I won't be able have to hide shit at my yacht parties anymore. And, you know, when it comes time for the presidential election, I'll get back to being a anti-tax right winger.
Well, listen, I think I get where you're going, and I appreciate what Cory Booker is doing. And there's maybe a shred of truth or sense to what you're saying. You know, and I have friends that are figuring out a way to kind of capitalize on the surge of the cannabis industry. So I'm a supporter of legalization. It just doesn't make any sense. And if you have, I mean, it really legitimately can create a way for people to break away, you know, from relying on, you know, the corporate structure, and you all of a sudden will have that many more entrepreneurs because of there's so many different ways that there are positive uses for cannabis or weed or marijuana, whatever you want to call it. That being said, this bill that Cory Booker is proposing is symbolic. It's something that it's dead in the water. Now, the real question is, when does it not become dead in the water? When does it become not symbolic? When does it actually become something that can become a reality? I don't think 2018 is with time off for that. That's one that's way too soon. I don't think you'll be able to sway enough people. There's a lot of money tied into why pot isn't legal. There's a lot of industries that don't want it legal, not because they care about public health, but because it impacts them financially. So I think that where this could come into play, though, is your 2020 election, right? You know, so, you know, 2 years from now, you know, I mean, we're a year and some change away from 2018. So, you know, you throw another 2 years on top of that, then maybe what you're saying makes sense. Maybe then people are able to kind of go back, look at it, dig it up. You know, you got to wonder, is Cory Booker going to be running for president in 2020? You know, is that something that he kind of brings to the table where he says, listen, this is what I brought as, you know, this is what I brought as a senator. This is how I feel. This is what I believe. I'm going to push to get this done. I don't know. You may be right. And that may not be a bad idea. That may be exactly why he did it. You know, right now, I do think it's strictly symbolic, and I don't think it goes very far.
Steve,
what do they do with it?
Let me throw something at you, though. And this just popped into my head, but if this comes down to a vote in the Senate, let's say you can get the vast majority of Democrats behind it, whether it's for political reasons or they want to smoke weed reasons. You look at senators from Colorado, there's, I believe, two Republican senators in Colorado. They'll have to look that up. I mean, Washington and Oregon, pretty liberal states. Nevada has, I think, one Democrat, one Republican. I think any state where it's already legal that realizes the financial impact of the financial risk of Jeff Sessions going hardcore federal anti-pot, they might have to vote that way just to protect those industries in their own states, and that could get you to 52 or 53.
What just happened? How did we get to 52 or 53?
I mean, you had 48 Democrats and throw in a few Republicans, and
I mean, you're making an assumption that just because the Democrats are going to vote for it.
I guess I am.
I mean, that's a huge assumption. I mean,
well, and I guess
I think that's interesting. I think that's if you're in the weed industry, or if you're a pot smoker, you know, looking for some type of legalization. Well, that's your best case scenario to get this through. I do not feel.
And Steve, maybe it goes totally Democrat because of the number of people like me who just think that incarcerating people for doing something no worse than what I'm doing right now, I'm drinking wine while I'm talking to you, you know, is something we need to change our criminal justice system. So I think you'd probably rally a shit ton of Democrats behind that and a fair number of Republicans based on their economic interests in their state and their fear of losing it. Because of the dozens or so people I know from states where it's legal, I haven't heard one complaint.
Well, we need a deeper analysis of that. I mean, because I think there's, you're making way too many assumptions on where people's allegiances lie. And so we would need to go through and look, you know, state by state, representative by representative, on kind of what their voting history is and how they perceive it. You know, I mean, I think you're making way too many assumptions. And especially with an issue like this, it's a hot button issue that it impacts a lot of different things. And just because someone's a Democrat doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to vote for this if it negatively impacts a big enough portion of their constituency.
Let's table this for now, but I guess when we started this conversation.
If I have time this week, which I'm not sure when I will, but if I have time this week, maybe I can start that process, and down the road we can have maybe just kind of a special show focused on, you know, who's voted for what, or who's voted against what, and, you know, kind of do like a mock draft of how we think people would vote on it and what that would mean.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that you're right. That would take some time and some research, and we're both busy guys. I guess my bigger point is we both started this discussion a few minutes ago saying it's a dead in the water issue, and I'm talking myself out of that.
Yeah, I mean, which is fine. That is you talking yourself out of it. For me, it's very dead in the water. But I like to give your ideas thought. I like to, you know, commit to, you know, things that you're passionate about, Jim. So,
okay. You know, well, thank you.
Whatever I can do to prop you up and support you, brother.
You're so snarky.
I do what I can.
Oh my gosh, the incredible lack of sincerity is, I would call it palpable. It's almost admirable how you can be my buddy while kicking me in the dick. Well done. You're very proud of yourself right now, aren't you?
No, I'm just thinking it sounds like an awful hand job.
Okay. All right. I'm punting on third down on this one.
Good. I want to circle back. By the way, we brought up the Donald Trump tweet about the whole change in the military thing. We didn't talk about it. I mean, we talked about how it was a distraction, and it was, the whole point was to basically throw the media and the base and everybody else off the scent. But we didn't actually talk about the kind of substance that was there. I do want to throw in that, listen, I am not the best when it comes to, you know, gay, lesbian rights, transgender, because I'm not the most empathetic guy or sympathetic guy. So, you know, I try to explain it where I don't want to see anybody be bullied. I don't want to see anyone abused. I don't want to see anyone subjected to being treated unfairly. So no matter who or what you are, if that's the case, right, if you're the underdog, then I'm going to fight for you, right?
Right.
So especially when it comes to, you know, like, you know, I've seen, you know, in high school, that's who I was. I didn't like it when I was younger in high school, and then I carried that with me. Now, listen, my thoughts on gay marriage are very simple. If you don't like gay marriage, then don't marry a person of the same sex, and you don't have to worry about it, right?
And if you're invited to a gay wedding and you don't want to go, don't go.
Don't go.
Don't even send them a gift. It's all good. But leave people alone.
Right.
I think I'm more outspoken than you on these issues.
Right. I mean,
because,
and you are, right? I mean, but if you have an issue with transgender people, then don't have surgery to have your balls removed, right? Like, I mean, if you're a guy, or don't have surgery to have a penis added if you're a woman. I think it's pretty fucking simple. But for some reason, people get obsessed with, you know,
what other people are doing. That's the point. It doesn't affect you.
Right, and so on this, when it comes to the military, to me, it's kind of, it's just, it's so bullshit, right? Like, what, I mean, the fact that, oh, we're going to ban transgender people from all forms of service. Like, you don't need to ban them from any type of service, but even if you wanted to say, okay, we'll ban you from what happens out in the field, you know, while you're going through a transition, right? If you want to put that caveat on it, then I'm not going to argue with you on that point, right?
If a person if is, there's a physical limitation because, right.
Right, there's, I mean, like, there's hormone imbalances, and, like, when bullets are flying, you don't want a person who's, you know, who has a hormone imbalance out on the battlefield. Now, the other side to that, though, is, listen, we're sending soldiers out there, you know, whatever the words are for, you know, we're sending natural-born men and women out there day in and day out who have a bevy of issues. Like, people, you know, and people who don't want transgender in the military, they say, oh, well, these are all the things that we keep people out for, people with asthma and flat feet and that are fat and that are too skinny. And that's true. But we have plenty of people in the military right now who pass all those tests but are still emotional wrecks, right? We still have people in the military who have physical issues, right? We have guys taking Viagra. We have women taking birth control. Birth control, by the way, is just doses of hormones to control a woman's body and preventing her from getting pregnant, right? You know, I mean, Viagra is a medicine that was used to control, you know, people with heart issues. And,
yeah, it's a vasodilator.
Lo and behold, it pops erections. So, I mean...
Oh, yes, it does.
You have guys in the military taking something that can give you an erection just by popping a fucking pill, and they're on the battlefield. You have women who are taking doses of hormones to prevent their bodies from doing certain things. But what the hell is a transgender person, right? Is a person who's taking hormones to keep their bodies from doing certain things. You have people who are taking all sorts of medication, who've had all sorts of surgeries and everything else, right? There are people who have been in battle who have been wounded in one way, shape, or form, and have been able to go back into the field and continue to fight, right? So this whole idea that, well, a person is having a surgery and then they have these hormones, so that makes them unfit or whatever, I mean, it's garbage, right? It's bogus.
Yeah, I agree. You took the long road to get there, but yes, you're right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because I think there need to be, like, you have to have examples, right? You have to explain it. You know, and here's a short way of getting there. We have transgender people in the military now, right? And, I mean, are they just causing people to die left and right? Doesn't seem like it. It seems like if that were the case, there'd be a study, and they would have pulled them a long time ago.
Well, in fact, the Trump rationale was the military has to pay for these surgeries, and it's bogging down our military. No. I'm willing to bet that the transgender surgery portion of the military budget, if it even exists, and frankly, I don't know for sure that it does, but if it does, I'm guessing the 59 missiles you shot into Syria shoot three less, and you can pretty much cover that issue. I'm pulling that number out of my ass.
Well, I mean, I don't have to pull numbers out of my ass. I mean, the total cost, right? Because there's so few. And what they mean by this, I mean, this is also, I mean, the number is about $8 million, right? That's the high end, is the cost. It's $8 million for transition surgeries and,
you know, I have to tell you, Steve, I was walking by a TV screen the other day, and Fox News had this story on, and they had either $1.2 billion or $12 billion as the cost. And I was literally walking out of a restaurant, and there was no sound, and I will try to dig that up, because that was such clear bullshit.
That's called 12 billion, yes.
There's $12 billion every year in the military budget for transgender surgeries. Right.
I mean, if you just think of the cost of the surgery, and then for one person, and then you multiply it out. And then, I mean, so you mean to tell me that we have that many transgender people in the military
who are getting the surgery? Yes.
Right.
That's what that number would mean if it was legit.
Hey, Cuddy inning. We don't have that many people. We don't have that many transgender people in the military. I don't think we have that many transgender people doing any one thing anywhere. So the idea that it's going to be in the billions is ridiculous. The number that I saw was 8 million. Let's say it's somewhere in between. All right. Let's say it's $100 million. Right. $100 million in the Department of Defense's budget is a drop in the bucket.
It's a dig into the sofa cushions that's sitting in there.
Right. Now, here's your deal.
What's that?
A lot of people are going to argue that we, as the American public, should not be paying for these surgeries. Right? Like, that's not what the military shouldn't be paying for this. Now, I can almost get on board with that. I would almost get on board with that if the military weren't paying for other things, for other type of elective surgeries that were less impactful to people's lives, right? Like, I mean, the military is paid for breast implants, breast reductions. They paid for, different surgeries on men for aesthetic reasons as well. And transgender is not about aesthetics. It's a direct link and tie to a person's feelings and emotional state. It's a lot more serious. So it's not just a frivolous thing that people are having done or that they're throwing out there. So I don't know. Some people say, well, for that particular reason is why we shouldn't support it, right? And that's what destabilizes a person and should keep them off the battlefield.
Well, I would say it a different way. I would say that if the issue is economic, then make an economic decision and say, we don't consider this to be part of your military service, so we will not pay for this, but we're not going to ban you based on who you are. And suddenly that would lose all of its political steam, and Trump would have nowhere to stand on.
This is what I would say. I think the key is what you just said. Still pay for transition therapy.
If that's really the issue, which we both know it's not.
That's not the issue, right? Like, I mean, you can say, listen, we're not going to pay for transition therapy. And I think this is, I think that solves a problem. I think you got to be careful with it, because here's the thing, and I don't know a lot about transgender surgery. I don't know how long you have to take hormones afterwards, if you have to take them forever. If you're transitioning from female to male, how long do you have to take testosterone? If you're transitioning from male to female, do you take estrogen or what? I don't know how that works, and I don't know how long you have to do that for. I would argue, though, that if you're going to pay for birth control, if you're going to pay for Viagra, then you are going to have a hard time explaining to me why you can't pay for testosterone or whatever estrogen for men going to women. I don't know. The other thing is, what if they pay for men to receive testosterone therapy, right? Like, you get to a certain age, right? Your levels start to dip, and so do they pay for it? Because some insurance is paid for that. So the question is, if they pay for that, then what's, now you're really at a, what's the difference? So,
Well, all right. So, while we're on the military, with all this other stuff going on, with all the what feels like a reality TV show in Washington D.C. right next to me going on, we got North Korea really thumping its chest, and I had a few family members at my family reunion last weekend. And one other person come up to me and just, like, they know I'm into politics and world events. Like, what are we going to do about this Kim Jong-un? And I have no idea. But, I mean, Lindsey Graham came out today and said, if thousands of people are going to die, they're going to die over there, not over here. Meaning that if North Korea threatens us with a missile, it's going to be a fight we take to them rather than letting them take to us. And, I mean, trust me, I don't like the idea of anyone making an attack on the U.S. But this shit's getting serious, and we're dealing with an enemy in Kim Jong-un who is from the best I can tell, completely unhinged. I don't believe he's dumb enough to shoot a missile at the U.S. for two reasons. One, it might not get off the launch pad, and two, if it does, it'll probably get shot down. But
talking about it, he's already done it. They just haven't gone that
far. Yeah, they haven't gone very far. They're probably not nuclear armed, capable of being nuclear armed. But he's been testing them, and he's been, you know, rattling the saber. But I mean, they did have that one that blew up on the pad not too long ago. There was some speculation that may have been influenced by U.S. weapon systems, which I actually hope it was. But looking big picture, there's two questions I think we need to know the answers to, and I certainly don't know them. Is one, does Kim Jong-un have a reality button? Does he know he can't win this? Because if being told since birth that he was a descendant of the gods, does he actually believe North Korea could take on the United States and win? Or is he just pandering, or just, I should say pandering, saber-rattling for the sake of, you know, trying to still things his way and basically be the baby that cries loudest in the room to get the most attention? I don't know the answer to that. And if, in fact, he is as scary as I think he might be, is there a legitimate military solution? And I don't know the answer to that either.
The legitimate military solution involves China. But China doesn't want to engage, because China doesn't want to deal with the repercussions of ripping apart North Korea and then having to deal with whatever...
refugees and...
Right. That's at the end of the day, that's the biggest issue, right? China is just like, listen, he is fine where he's at. He's that annoying kid at the party who is just the worst, but you know, you figure his parents will be here in hours, so just let him tire himself out. Like, China's not gonna do anything, then we're not gonna do anything. Like, I mean, we can, Lindsey Graham can talk tough and go back to and say with John Wayne movie all he wants to, but
you almost did it.
We're not going to do anything with North Korea. The only way we do something is if he actually arms a missile with a nuclear warhead and is able to fire it anywhere near in range of the United States, whether it's Alaska or California or what have you. And then we intercept it, and at that point, I think we engage. But even then, I have to question how engaged we would be, right? And this is why I will never sit in the White House. This is one of the millions of reasons why. Because if it were me by now, I would have said, you know what? I do not have time for you. I would go send as many missiles right into his royal palace, and I would wipe North Korea off the planet. Right, call me a bad guy, call me a dick, call me a center or whatever you want to call me. That would be my solution. You know, I mean, especially after the third, fourth, fifth missile test, it's just like, clearly you have a death wish, so I'm going to grant. Now,
I can't go there.
Right, in the real world, you can't do that, right? Which is why I'm not president and why no one gives me control of anything. So, you know, the sensible people... the way they're going to do it is they're not going to do anything. They're going to sit there and let this guy just continue to blow his load and not really hurt anybody. You know, and then they're
other than his own people.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's not our people. It's not the Chinese people.
Right,
it's
right,
not
true.
Really South Koreans. So, you know, unfortunately, you drew the short straw by being, you know, a person born in fucking North Korea. Sorry. But we're not risking anything to save you. There's no value in it for us. And that's a harsh way of looking at it, but that's how everyone is looking at it. And, by the way, there's not a better way to look at it if you're not willing to pull the trigger and just wipe them off the face of the earth.
Steve, I honestly, this is a situation I have no idea what the right answer is. I mean, you would love to go in there and take out that administration in a way that didn't affect the populace and give the people there a chance to, quote unquote, re-educate themselves. And I know that's a horrifying word from historical perspectives, but to show them that, you know, hey, you don't need to starve. Hey, you can, you know, get brought into the
Here's the other part. What happens time, we go into a country and we take out the leader who we don't like. What happens every time?
We insert a sham democracy and things go to shit.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other part of it, too. Like, listen, I mean, you could sit here and, oh, well, we did it because, oh, the other guy was so bad. He was really bad. Maybe
The only possible difference in this case is there is South Korea, which a lot of the people in that country, or several, a significant number, were separated from family members. And you do have people who look alike, who speak the same language, who, I mean, those countries didn't got split in 1954 or whatever it was. So the one difference between that and, say, going into Iraq is that there is a country with a bona fide reason and potential ability to try to unify things under a democracy with a thriving economy. I'm not saying it would all work out and be kumbaya, but that is the one difference between that and the other things.
Who said South Korea wants to absorb North Korea?
I don't know if they do or don't. I think they'd love to get rid of the DMZ, and they would love to, the people who have family members they lost 60, 70 years ago, they're never not alive anymore. Fuck.
Yeah, Jim.
This is a great idea 30 years ago.
Right, I mean, exactly. Also, are any of those people in government? In South Korea?
No, I guess I'm just trying to point out the difference between, say, you know, invading Afghanistan, invading Iraq, the Vietnam War, you know, all these other situations where we tried to insert a government. Germany reunited, right?
Yeah.
Different circumstance, not denying it, but
also took a little while.
It did, but well, it's been a little while on this one too.
It took a little while, and there's a little bit of a difference there where, you know, there was some, you know, Germany, you know, East Berlin. There's a little bit of guilt there about there was some acknowledgement that maybe they let things get a little too out of control, and, you know,
if I had all the answers, I would be in office right now.
This is what I'm saying. I think that, you know, everyone's so complicated. Where is it? Or, I mean, you have to do risk versus reward analysis. You have to look at, okay, how committed are we to North Korean? Like, the people. We can feel bad for them, but what are we willing to risk to liberate them?
But if you literally take out Pyongyang, and then what happens after that? Because if you create a total void in the world, who knows? I mean, do you create another Afghanistan? Because that can't be ruled out.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think that's an absolute possibility. And, I mean, you know, just even if you take them out and then you insert someone that you believe is the right person, again, we have multiple examples of that not working. And so we may need to get away from this idea that if we don't like a person, we take them out and replace them, or we just take them out and then that's good enough, and then, you know, democracy and barbecues and star-spangled bikinis just all become life in a year or so. You know, that hasn't worked anywhere.
It hasn't. The difference is this particular guy that we were talking about taking out is threatening us on a weekly basis. He's not capable yet. He's not capable in the grand scheme. My concern is he might be delusional enough to think he is capable.
This is where I'm going to lose a lot of people. This is where I can tough to work with, and this is why I can be tough to be friends with. If you're not ready to sacrifice the lives of North Koreans, then get the fuck out of this game. Because at the end of the day, your only solution is to get rid of this guy. North Koreans are going to have to die. A lot of them. That's your solution. You want to get rid of Kim Jong-un? You have to kill a lot of North Koreans. There will be casualties. A lot of casualties. You know that going in. and nobody's willing to do it. So if you're not willing to do it, right, then there's no way to get rid of this. There's no happy ending to this. It is going to be brutal and it's going to be ugly. If he keeps pushing and he manages to get something off that godforsaken island and it comes anywhere near us, then whoever is in office at that point in time is going to have to look everybody right dead in the eye and launch a missile and say, all right, well, you know what? Well, we're going to take a lot of them out.
Not island, but I know what you're saying. But
whatever.
Yeah.
That is fucking annoying.
Well,
don't do that.
All right.
It's snooty and rude. Don't do that.
It's what?
A little correction. I hate it when people do that. It's actually not an island. It's really the peninsula. Like, whatever the fuck.
Okay, my right? point
is... It's a little piece of shit. I mean, I get your point, but I mean, you get my point.
Yes, I do. I do. I just... all right. This is a shitty way to end a show, but I don't have anything more to say on this. I think it's a messed up situation that I think our ugly banter back and forth shows how complicated it is. I really wish we had...
It's not a diplomatic... There's not an easy diplomatic way to deal with this, right? But the way to deal with this involves a lot of bloodshed. I'm sorry.
No, if it comes to military, you have to go hard, no doubt.
Right, and if you're not willing to do that, then I am fine. Then let's just stop, right? Then let's just stop talking about it, right? Like, I mean, all right, Lindsey Graham, you're talking tough, and that's great, but really, are you really, really committed to what it would take to actually do what you're saying? And I think the answer is no, right? I don't think Lindsey Graham has that type of backbone. So... You know, my thing is, if you're going to do it, then just do it. Get commit to it and do it. I'll still be here. I'll still support you.
Well, fortunately, Cleveland is definitely not on their target list, so we're good.
Great. That's a great thing about living in Cleveland. Like, you really never have to worry about being on, like, the terrorist target zone.
You know, it was I was out to dinner tonight with coworkers and people I've been dealing with. And they were talking about living on the East Coast and doing their thing and how expensive it was. I'm like, if you had any idea how nice it was to be in Cleveland, given housing prices and our food scene and everything else. But it was not the right crowd. And that's a total diversion of topics, but I'll tell you what, man. It's getting late.
Yeah.
You ready to roll?
Yeah. I gotta be up early tomorrow. And so let's, me and you will reconnect. But in the meantime, it was fun. We'll talk.
Thanks, man. This is Whiskey Congress. We're Whiskey Congress on all social media, whiskeycongress.com, and we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and pretty much everything else. So good talking to you, man. We'll talk to you soon. Right?
Yep.
Later.